I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to All Stats Aren't We, a podcast in which Leeds fans cast their combined eye over goings on at Elland Road, giving scrutiny to the underlying statistics and tactical footings at work at Leeds United. I'm John McKenzie, the Adam Forshaw is back of the podcast. Did you hear? He's back. And I'm joined by the Adam Forshaw is back of the podcast, Tom Alderson. Seriously, he's back. And finally, the Adam Forshaw is back of the podcast. I mentioned it, right? He's back. Adam Forshaw is back. It's Darren Driver. Darren, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Yeah, and we're back. We've actually managed to do something which we'd never managed to do before, which is something off the podcast bingo card, which is to do the re-record because somebody's technology has fucked up, and in this case, it is my technology that fucked up. And earlier on, just so that the listener knows, I did quite a good joke about donating my hips to Adam Forshaw. But I can't do that again because you two have already heard it, and I don't think it'd really work as well the second time.
Yeah, and I was going to make a joke about the hips not lying, so I won't I won't make a joke about that either. But anyway, Tom Alderson, how are you doing?
I'm even better than I was about 4 hours ago when we recorded this for the first time. I've just watched City against Dortmund, and I realised halfway through I probably should have watched Liverpool to actually do some revision for this podcast.
I did wonder.
But yeah, not like, I do usually watch City, so yeah, but it would have made a lot more sense if I'd done it the other way around. I think I made the right choice in the end anyway.
My research was watching Joe Boyd, the producer from the 60s, and the guitarist from Fairport Convention, which was probably different from watching Man City play.
I too also watch Man City Dortmund rather than Liverpool, which, as you've pointed out, probably would have been helpful, but here we are. Anyway, I think in terms of the news, there is no news other than Adam Forshaw is back.
There's a groundsperson role available at the club now. That's what we mentioned earlier.
We did mention the groundsperson role. As everyone knows, we are Leeds' primary grounds media outlet. If you want to know anything about the pitch at Leeds United, this is your first port of call. And so if you are interested in being a groundsperson at the club, going to caress the pitch at Elland Road week in, week out, then do find the job advert and apply for it.
You can't be any worse than the last one.
Yeah, it can't be worse than the last one. And you can go on to be our number one pitch correspondent as well. So what more inducement could you want than that? But yeah, just another reminder that Adam Forshaw is potentially starting this Friday in the under-23s game, 7 p.m. Get your clocks set and make sure that you watch that. That's available on YouTube and the club channel as well.
Decided that I'm going to do a Twitter take. It's going to be a Forshaw Day takeover. Mm. I'm going to watch the 23s. I'm going to live tweet his every involvement. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
But other than that, there is no news. It's very late at night now. We're all tiring. So let's jump straight into the Liverpool preview, because we are playing Liverpool on Monday. And this week I was lucky enough to talk to John O'Sullivan, a freelance journalist who also puts stuff out at the Anfield Index. And this is what he had to say about Liverpool. So, John, hi, how are you doing?
I'm great, thanks. I'm really looking forward to being on this. I was on this podcast for the first game of the season, which was a 4-3 cracker. So hopefully we get something similar on Monday night.
Yeah, I'm hoping so too. It's been a weird season. You've mentioned that we played that right at the beginning of the season and people were impressed with Leeds' performance that day. But since then, Liverpool have had something of a collapse. And so maybe our performance that day looks a little bit less impressive than it did at the time. But I'm interested in what you put Liverpool's poor season down to.
I don't think you can look past the injuries. Like, directly or indirectly, they've snookered Liverpool. So when you miss defenders of Virgil van Dijk, Joe Matip and Joe Gomez's calibre, it obviously has harmed the defence. And then to compound issues, you have Fabinho, who was actually quite good when he played in centre-half. He had to drop back into defence, and this harmed the midfield, given he's comfortably the club's best defensive midfielder. Then, in lieu of having Fabinho as a midfield option, other players like Jorginho Wijnaldum have had to play way more than they would have, and inevitably performances have dropped. Thiago also missed 3 months, and so has Jordan Henderson with his recent injury, which meant the players have played almost constantly, and that's in a really compressed season because of COVID. So I think the drop back in a lot of players' form is inevitable. Then you have Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson, and they're the club's main supply of creativity, but they've had to cut their attacking wings somewhat and sit back to protect the defence, and this has really lessened the team's potency in attack. I think really another thing, and it's not been mentioned too often, is the lack of height, really, with all the injuries, and it's left Liverpool really impotent at set pieces. So last season, for context, they tied with Man City for the most set-piece goals in the league with 17. But now they've only scored 6, and they've scored none since mid-December. So people will call it excuse-making, but you can't look past the injuries, all of which happened, like I mentioned, in the most compressed season of all time. And, you know, some players, and Jurgen Klopp, as much as we can't measure this, have suffered family bereavements, and they haven't been able to grieve properly. You wouldn't need a degree in psychology to see that could impact performance. So there's been a lot of factors, really, but I think injury is the elephant in the room.
As things stand, Liverpool are on the cusp of getting back into the top four. Do you think they've turned things around?
While this iteration of Liverpool are still very flawed, I think they've turned things around to a certain degree. I would cite 3 factors as a catalyst to this improvement. 1, Fabinho has returned to midfield, and this has allowed other players, such as Thiago, to play their more natural games. And this has really helped the Reds control games more, which was an element of the game that wasn't so good at the beginning and the middle of the season. And 2, although they aren't perfect, the familiarity of having consistency in selection with Nat Phillips and Ozan Kabak at centre-half is huge. So Liverpool this season have fielded 20 different pairings in the heart of the defence. So to have a regular partnership really helps. You know, Phillips in particular isn't really of the standard required. He's a bit meat and two veg and a bit slow. But his aerial strength and bravery has really helped. And Kabak really has looked so assured for a 21-year-old after a difficult start. And he has played the more mature, measured role between him and Phillips. He's really sweeping behind and he's organizing defense more so. But you can still see that inevitably he has his moments of rawness. And I think finally, one of the biggest things to take as a reason for why Liverpool have improved a lot lately is the return of Diogo Jota. So his array of finishing, his left foot, right foot headers, has really given Liverpool a weapon they had so badly missed. I think this is probably the worst run of form since Sadio Mane has joined the club. So having the Portuguese return has been timely. Liverpool still, as shown by their underlying data, create a number of decent chances. And Jota, Salah aside, is the most capable player in the team to make hay for them. So his return has been huge and has really given Liverpool more bite and attack.
So what do you think is the biggest challenge for Liverpool going into the rest of the season?
I think really, depending on how they get on in Europe, and realistically, I think their goose is cooked there, unfortunately, but you never know. I think Liverpool's issue is going to be focus. Like, should they bow out of the Champions League, their remaining league games are eminently winnable. And those are the kind of games where they have come undone regularly this term. They've actually been quite good in the inverted commas big games. So I think retaining that focus and that drive between now and the end of the season and not feeling sorry for themselves if they have another setback in European football will be key.
You described the last game between these two sides as a bit of a cracker. What did you make of it?
I thought it was a superb game. I think Leeds really showed a blueprint to a lot of other teams on how to expose Liverpool and how to attack Liverpool. So in that game, Calvin Phillips was superb. He kind of sat deep in midfield and he treaded a lot of through balls. He played a lot of balls over the top. And they looked to isolate Trent Alexander-Arnold against Jack Harrison, and it paid dividends on a couple of occasions. And now we've seen since Aston Villa have done it, Real Madrid successfully done it with Toni Kroos. So I think what Leeds showed in that game is that you can be brave against Liverpool and it can pay dividends to a certain degree. Like, even though they lost the game, that was still a newly promoted team coming to the home of the English champions and giving a great account of themselves.
Do you think we'll see much different tactically from Jurgen Klopp this time around?
I don't think we'll see maybe a pivot away from the 4-3-3 shape. He's kind of experimented a lot with 4-2-3-1 in closing out games at times this season, but I don't think really he'll veer away from the 4-3-3. I think what will be more interesting is who he will select to fill out those positions. But I think he'll approach the game the same way as he has done in most games. He'll look to dominate the possession, to dominate the territory, and to play with intensity and, of course, counter-press.
More generally this season, how would you say that Liverpool's tactics have changed? Have they changed much at all?
There's been certain tweaks with, like I mentioned before, I don't think the fullbacks, Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson, have really bombed on as much or as often as they have done in the past. But that's because there's been 20 centre half pairings, and they've a lot of the time have had to maybe clip their wings somewhat to help protect the defenders, because even at times it wasn't even defenders, it was midfielders. There was games where Jordan Henderson and Fabinho played in the heart of Liverpool's defence. But I think wholly Liverpool have tried to play in more or less the same manner. Sometimes they've had a different shape, like a 4-2-3-1 or maybe even a 4-2-4. But what's been retained has been the philosophy and the style of football that they've largely played for the majority of Jurgen Klopp's tenure at the club. So maybe at times they've looked to taper back their press and not play with so much intensity, but that's more out of probably a preservation perspective than, you know, trying to fully change suit.
You've already mentioned this season that Liverpool have tended to go with a 4-3-3 or a 4-1-4-1, however you look at it. And there has been that shift late in games to a 4-2-3-1. Talk us through that. Why do you think that 4-2-3-1 has been used? Is it simply just to give a little bit more control in the middle?
I think so. And, you know, Jurgen Klopp played that for times in the 2018 and 19 season, especially near Christmas. And there was one time they absolutely hockeyed Arsenal where they played with Mohamed Salah as a nine. And I thought that it suited them a lot. A lot of Liverpool's players at their former club would have played in two-man midfields. So you're looking at Naby Keita playing the box midfield in Leipzig, Fabinho partnered at Bakayoko at Monaco in a two-man midfield. Thiago obviously played in a two-man midfield for Bayern. So I think this is something that Klopp has been building towards for a long time with his signings. It's obviously the shape that he predominantly played at Dortmund. And I think what it does for Liverpool is it helps them. It's a mechanism really to fit all of their attackers into the same team at once. And I think that with this shape, and Bayern Munich have played it a lot, it could be the antidote to Liverpool to really stop their issues with like low block defenses, because it would just incorporate another attacker in. And it would also give them a nice balance with a double pivot midfield in terms of defense. And that would help enable the fullbacks to push forward a lot. Because sometimes with their 4-3-3 shape, I find that it's one too many players behind the ball. And if we were to move to a 4-2-3-1, you would have another player in the attacking line, be it maybe Roberto Firmino as a 10 and then have Salah as the number 9. So I think that would be a good means of really helping them in an attacking sense. And also the fact that when you have Virgil van Dijk back, he is so good that I don't think you need to play an inherently defensive system to still be solid when you have individuals that are that capable, such as he is.
You've mentioned a few midfielders there. I'm interested actually in your opinions of two midfielders who arrived from the Bundesliga. You mentioned Naby Keita, who has been pretty disappointing, I think it's fair to say, since he arrived at Liverpool after having just some absolutely monumental seasons in the Bundesliga with Leipzig. The other midfielder obviously is Thiago from Bayern. What do you make of those two signings? Do you think that in hindsight they were bad signings, or is it simply that the situation has sort of conspired against them a little bit in terms of what's been going on the field?
Firstly, I would describe Keita as probably a little bit unlucky. One, in terms of he's quite often injured. Like the flow of his Liverpool career has been as such. He's played a number of games in a row and he's beginning to start to impress. Next thing, he breaks down. And then, you know, Liverpool's form for two of the last three seasons has been so good that when he's returned from injury, he hasn't necessarily got his place back in the team, because the incumbent midfielders have been playing very well and Liverpool have been winning trophies and been winning games. So I think he's been unfortunate from that regard. And especially because a lot of his injuries mightn't have necessarily been under the umbrella of injury prone, it's more been like he's been on the receiving end of terrible tackles, such as from Ivan Rakitic in a Champions League semi-final, and then he's been very poorly managed by the Guinean national team, who actually played him through injury during the 2019 African Cup of Nations, and that just exasperated things. So I think he's been unlucky with injuries, certainly. And another thing maybe that's been unfortunate for him has been that Liverpool, since Keita joined the club, have kind of changed tact. Now, I would cite the appointment of Pepe and Linders, who's more into positional play and more kind of prosaic style of football, becoming the assistant manager of the club. Whereas beforehand, it was Zico Bubac, who was, you know, an exponent of the high-intensity, heavy-metal counter-pressing game. So Liverpool have kind of changed tack a little bit. And, you know, it hasn't suited Keita as much as I'm sure he would have suited him if he had joined Liverpool perhaps a season earlier when Bubac was still the assistant. But, you know, as it was, the team has been very successful with this kind of adapted style of football. And I think Keita has just been unlucky. And sometimes it just breaks like that, unfortunately. As for Thiago, I think largely he's been good. But an issue has been that he's perhaps had to play a more defensive game than he would have been signed for. Of course, Fabinho playing in centre half means that Liverpool have kind of changed their number six a lot. It's either been Henderson at times, it's been Wijnaldum at other times, and other times it's been Thiago. And certainly I don't think the defensive side in terms of sitting in front of the defence is his strongest attribute. I don't think, like, for example, he is bad defensively because he's a very good reader of the game. He's adept in pressing. He's come through the La Masia school and he's played for Bayern Munich, who have invariably played like that for the best part of the last decade. So Thiago probably hasn't been as good as I thought he would be, but he has still been quite good. And I guess you have to look at his Liverpool career in context. First of all, he didn't have a preseason with the club. He only joined in September after playing deep into the summer with Bayern Munich and winning the European Cup. And then secondly, he gets absolutely mangled with a tackle in the Merseyside Derby and he misses 3 months. And then when he comes back into the team, they're low on confidence, and like a lot of the attackers such as Firmino and Mane aren't necessarily playing well. So while I definitely think that he hasn't hit the heights that I would have predicted for him to hit, I think he's quietly been quite effective. And I think as time goes on, you can really start to see him adapting to the style of play. And okay, I don't think he'll have a preseason this summer because of the European Championships, and he'll be a cornerstone of the Spanish team. I think he'll certainly look better for this experience next season in Liverpool Red.
The other talking point that is always hashed out whenever Liverpool are being talked about is the high back line. I'm interested in your take on the high back line.
Yeah, I can't understand the narrative around this. So like a high line was once described in Brazilian football as a donkey line because people literally thought you were a donkey if you wanted to play like this because it was inherently dangerous. But it's all about risk and reward. I mean, the reward is keeping your team compact and situated in the opposition half. And, you know, Klopp is really a student of Arrigo Sacchi, and Arrigo Sacchi's ideals was to keep the distance between the forwards and the defence like fairly minimal. So like if you want to counter-press the ball, you have to have short distances between front and back. Otherwise, there's massive gaps and you become exposed. Now, and I guess that's the reward to it. But I guess the risk is like Nat Phillips, for example, he isn't really quick enough to play in a high line. But I think the fact that you have Alisson, who is a capable sweeper, kind of mitigates that danger. A lot of people would have said it about Bayern Munich as well. It's like, oh, their high line is like a kamikaze high line. I mean, they won the treble last season and they have the personnel that suits it. So I think certainly a lot of the talk around it has been overblown a bit. And, you know, besides, like the team has been coached over the course of the last 4 or 5 years to play this way. Like it's not as easy as just dropping back. You know, not that Klopp has the time to coach that anyway in this crazily compacted season. It's not as simple as just dropping back and being highly adept at being this counter-attacking team once you've been coaching a different manner of football for years. And, you know, I think the high line is here to stay with Liverpool, and it justifiably so, in my opinion.
Well, let's look forward to the game on Monday. How are you looking injury-wise at the moment?
Well, yeah, like relative to earlier in the season, not terribly, but there's still Jordan Henderson, Joe Gomez and Virgil van Dijk in the long-term absentee list. And then only really Curtis Jones is penciled in the short-term category. So it's not fantastic, but trust me, it's been far, far worse.
And so how do you think that you'll line up on Monday evening then?
So this is interesting. Like he's been maligned a lot lately, especially after being hooked early in the Real Madrid game. I think Naby Keita may start in a 4-3-3 midfield. So the Guinean, he's fantastic in transition. And the way he slaloms through the midfield is gorgeous to watch. And you know, given how Leeds like to go for man-to-man marking at times, I think Keita in midfield could be a real game-breaker. I think like Liverpool kind of like it when teams come on to them like that. A good example would be Atalanta, who employ a similar man-to-man system in the Champions League. Liverpool beat them 5-0 away from home, which is probably their best performance in any competition this season. And they looked so powerful in attack that night. And it could have been even more than five. And I think sometimes you can play into their hands by doing that. And I think one of the best players to take advantage of these kind of spaces and these opportunities that may arise would be Keita. And, you know, aside from that, I think you're probably looking at Jota over Mane just in terms of form. So I think the lineup is probably going to be Alisson, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Nat Phillips, Ozan Kabak, Andrew Robertson is the back four. And in midfield, Fabinho, Thiago, and Keita. And then up front, I would imagine you're looking at Diogo Jota, Roberto Firmino, and Mohamed Salah, of course.
So which players do you think need to perform well to beat Leeds? You've suggested Naby Keita there. Are there any others alternative to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Firmino needs to both play and to play well. So Calvin Phillips, as we saw in the first game, has a really varied and incisive range of passing. And I think stopping Leeds' main playmaker will be the key to stopping them. So Firmino didn't start against Real Madrid and Toni Kroos ran amok. So I think you really need to see him play to really just like limit the impact that Phillips can have in this game. And I think really another key facet is the other two players in the front three. Like Leeds are an excellent team, but I think that they will give you chances. And a lot of instances this season, Liverpool's finishing has let them down. So I really think the front three need to be very sharp for Liverpool to take 3 points from this.
And you mentioned Calvin Phillips there. Which other Leeds players worry you?
Rafinha, who has really impressed me, whether it's off the left or the right, I think he's been superb this season. And I could really well see Leeds trying to isolate him against Nat Phillips when Trent Alexander-Arnold goes forward, like they did in the first game with Jack Harrison, like Real Madrid did, for example, with Vinicius Jr., like Aston Villa have done at times with Ollie Watkins. But I really like Rafinha as a player. I kind of knew a lot about him when he was in Portugal. I was surprised that he moved to France, and I was surprised then that Leeds got him really unopposed as far as I can see. So like he's left-footed, he's really good in the ball. He regularly finds himself in good positions. I really like him. And if Liverpool were to do business in the Premier League this summer, he'd be one of the players that I think I would love them to sign. And he could have a Diogo Jota impression at the club, I think.
And I don't ever ask for predictions. Feel free to give one if you want to. But I'm more interested in how you think the game's going to unfold on Monday. So what do you think the game's going to look like?
It's hard to see Leeds reaching the same physical and emotional pitch they reached after playing away and winning at Manchester City with 10 men. I mean, that must have taken so much out of them physically and emotionally. And I think giving Liverpool a 4 full days to recover after a Real Madrid match, no matter how that goes, I can see it being a high-scoring game, and I can see it really being a great advertisement for Premier League football with two progressive coaches playing attacking, free-flowing football. If I were to gun to my head, I think I could see Liverpool winning 4-2, but I think there will be any number of goals in this.
Well, John, it's always an absolute pleasure chatting to you. What's the best way for our listeners to catch what you're putting out about Liverpool?
So you can follow me on Twitter at NotoriousJOS, and I invariably write for Anfield Index. So I should have something coming along in the next couple of days.
Well, thanks so much for chatting to us today.
Thank you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So that was John O'Sullivan, a freelance journalist who puts stuff out for the Anfield Index. And I think we'll kick off with you, Tom Alderson. What did you have percolating around in your head when you were listening to John?
I was thinking about who Leeds should play on the wings against Liverpool, because John mentioned that, and it's been mentioned in the media a lot with Alexander-Arnold not playing, not being picked for the England squad, that you can kind of get at Liverpool by putting the ball into that channel between Trent and, I think it's Phillips, who plays their right side of centre-back. So I was just thinking, who would you play there probably to take most advantage of that? Because obviously Rafinha is probably the best winger, whatever side he's playing on, and would probably make the most out of that space. But then someone like Jack Harrison, he's good at taking down those long balls with his touch. And then there's also Costa, who played very, very well at the weekend. And a game like this would probably suit Costa quite a lot, because he's good when we're in these sort of open more games where we're transitioning a lot more. So I just was interested to hear what you guys were thinking on who would you go for in this game?
Yes, good question. I think as you've pointed out, the weaknesses between the fullback and the centre back there. You've got someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold, who is maybe a little bit weaker defending backwards than Andy Robertson on the other side, and then you've got Nat Phillips, who I think John described of as being not up to scratch in terms of the level that he's at for Liverpool. And no doubt we will see Rafinha probably on that side, because Rafinha, I think, is the player who is going to make the most of those scenarios, particularly if he's got space to run into. We saw that happening in the Manchester City game over and over again, right, with the ball into the right-sided channel. And I guess we had sort of picked out Benjamin Mendy and Nathan Ake as the weak spots in the Man City back line, and that was our one outlet that we were sort of trying to squeeze a little bit. So I suspect we'll probably see something similar. Although what is interesting, I think, about that is that when I was watching the video back, obviously, to do the video analysis of that game, and I noticed how much of the players who were expected to get the ball into those channels were Liam Cooper and Ilan Meslier, obviously both of whom are left-footed. So I wonder whether or not, if we are targeting down that left-hand side, whether or not we might see the ball going through Llorente and maybe even Calvin Phillips a bit more, given that he is right-footed, and so you've got the requisite angle on that. But Darren, what do you make of that?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think you are going to see us switching the diagonal from the way which we ordinarily would do, which would be from Meslier and Cooper and you know, coming more from our right, if you guess. I'm just thinking about in terms of the other winger. I agree that Rafinha should probably play the left-hand side and try and get at Trent and Phillips. I think given how well Costa played against City, I think it'd be really harsh to drop him. I think he is someone who would also benefit from that space in behind, you know, Liverpool's fullbacks. And I know that John said they're not as attacking as they have been in the past, but they do still play an incredibly high line. And I think that we did see at times in the City game that is the sort of space that Costa can be really effective in. And also, I just think it's important to remember that he also had a really good game against Liverpool at Anfield. And I don't necessarily think that we're going to need, you know, very often when we talk on this podcast about which winger should play where, we try and factor in, well, which side do we need Harrison to do the kind of the bulk of the defensive work on? And actually, it's both. In this side, you can't play them on both sides. But I think perhaps we should probably be looking the other way this time and trying to take advantage of the one good opportunity that I think we've got of getting at them.
Yeah, as I was saying before, I think the interesting thing here is that I think what you have to do is determine which side Rafinha is playing on, and then ask the question, who do you play in the space that's left over? We know that Rafinha can play on both sides. I think we would probably be of the opinion that Rafinha is better from the left. And I think in this game, he probably will be played from the left. And so the question then is, who do you want to play on the right? Do you want to play Costa or do you want to play Harrison? And I think we've only really seen Harrison's best games from the right in a defensive capacity. Now, that doesn't mean to say that we wouldn't see Harrison on the right in this game, because tracking Andy Robertson would be a useful function. But it all very much depends then then on how Bielsa sees the attacking approach, whether or not we're just going to focus our attacks down the left-hand side as we did against City on the right, and then just maybe sit Harrison in on the right as a little bit more of a defensive option. I'll go to you on Tom Alderson on this. This is your question. So which one would you take on that right-hand side then, if we assume that Rafinha is playing on the left?
I think I'd go for Costa. I think if you, it usually comes down to, if Rafinha's going to play on the right, you go Harrison on the left, and then Rafinha on the left, it'll be Costa on the right, because I think that's then Costa and Harrison's best positions, respectively. And yeah, I just also think I have more, if we do want to switch it up, which we have seen in games quite often now, that this, the wing has switched, then I'd have more confidence probably of Costa going over to the, of switching Costa and Rafinha than I probably would have in Harrison and Rafinha switch more. I don't know if you agree with that.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think Costa is weaker on the left than Harrison is. So I think to some extent, whichever two wingers you choose to play from the start, you probably want to keep them in the same position throughout, unless you're going to switch them up midway through the game. So I guess from that point of view, if you do have an intention to swap the wingers at some point during the game, you know, we've said on this, or Tom Woodhead has said on this podcast many times that he doesn't feel like Harrison particularly makes a good attacking difference when he comes on as a substitute. If you're going to hold one of the wingers back, it might be Costa. But then you might choose Pervada instead of Harrison to come on as your substitute. So I think there are a kind of number of options which are definitely available to us there. But definitely Costa on the right and Rafinha on the left for me would be the starting combination that I'd like to see. I think Costa's defensive work, whilst it's not quite as good as Harrison's, I think it does go a bit unnoticed sometimes. I think he does put a good defensive shift in and covers the ground that's required. So I don't think you lose too much from that point of view.
Yeah, it seems like he's worth a defensive lapse every once in a while, but he's not defensively bad, as it were. It's that would be the way I would put it. Darren, what about you? What did you take away from what John was saying?
Yeah, it got me thinking about the presses a lot, and how, you know, in that first game of the season, it was kind of a bit crash, bang, wallop, demolition derby type thing. Everyone charging around, lots of high press, lots of, you know, kind of intensity. And I think that I was talking to a mate of mine who's a Liverpool fan before we recorded this the first time, and he was kind of saying that his observation is that since they got really turned over by Man City, that Liverpool have kind of really withdrawn from pressing with that level of intensity. And we've definitely seen us reduce the level of our high press, you know, in recent weeks by moving Dallas into that more zonal eight position. So I suppose it got me thinking about what the game's going to look like, I guess. I also noticed that Liverpool have only scored in the first half once in the last 5 months, and most of the goals in their games tend to come, you know, in terms of them scoring, but and in terms of them conceding in the last 15 minutes of games. So it just made me wonder how we approach it, whether we do try to kind of catch Liverpool cold at the start, go a bit more intense initially, and then withdraw, or whether we start in that more cagey and withdrawn and zonal position from the start. So I just think it's going to be really interesting in terms of how it plays out, and I just wondered what you guys thought.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's really tricky to try and read what happened against Manchester City, because that game looked like we were the deepest I've ever seen us play, and the most cagey I've seen us play, at least in terms of the out of possession structure. But that said, you know, I do think that we were trying to play the way that we usually play. I just think that Manchester City are so good at breaking presses that you end up just being forced deeper and deeper into your own half. And there's so many examples, again, going back to the Patreon video that I put out, the analysis there, just showing how you end up with situations where Bamford and Roberts are both sitting quite deep in their own half because they've managed to manipulate the press around so that one of them, well, Bamford has dropped into the central midfield position to cover Fernandinho, and then Roberts tries to drop in as well, and then suddenly you've got no one pressing from the front, and gradually that forward press just descends deeper and deeper and deeper, and the question then is, well, were we playing cagey, or was it simply the response to the way that Manchester City were playing? And so I think in this game it will depend very much on how Liverpool break the press. If Liverpool are playing well out of the back, then, you know, we could see a similar thing happen. I don't think we will, because I don't think Liverpool, I don't think many teams are as good at building up from the back as Manchester City are. So I think that's probably a one-off. But I will agree with you that we are, the interesting thing about this game is there's such a big space between the two games. And such a lot has happened since then. I mean, we went into the season thinking that Liverpool were going to be title challengers. And in that game, on the basis of that, it was an impressive result, right? That we managed to get three goals and you know, yes, we conceded four, but it was a pretty decent performance, all things considered. And then since then, Liverpool have sort of dropped off the rails and haven't looked so good. And we now aren't quite so sure about how we should be valuing Liverpool. But also, like, Leeds have changed a huge amount since then. And we've documented that a lot in this podcast over the course of the season. We've got Stuart Dallas now basically playing a zonal system in the middle when we've been using high pressing for most of the time under Bielsa. And so the combination of those two things, I think, means that it's quite hard to actually read how this is going to work itself out.
Yeah, I was thinking about our press a little bit because earlier on, John, you made the point that kind of we haven't pressed really well for weeks, and then I was sort of thinking about games in which we have, and I thought we did press pretty well against Fulham, and I thought we pressed pretty well early in the game against Sheffield United, but then I remembered that the common denominator in both of those games is that both of those teams are poor at playing through a press, and that's probably got as much to do with it as the quality of what we were doing.
I personally like us to be a bit more sort of not necessarily sort of zonal as we probably were against Man City, but not. I don't think I'd like to see us sort of go all intense and pressy in the first couple of minutes, because the one thing with Liverpool, they've kind of sort of got over their sort of bad run of form. Well, they're getting over their bad run of form at the moment. But one thing that was noticeable, and I'd sort of discussed this with one of my mates who's a Liverpool fan, that if they concede, or then their heads just drop, and like the intensity just goes immediately. And they also, the same thing happens when they can't break down a team. So I think if you gave them an early goal, there's a chance that they could just turn us over, really. But the longer we stay in the game, and even if we could nick an early goal, which obviously is the ideal situation in any match you play, that I just think it could see them sort of losing their confidence. And Darren's put up that record of them conceding a lot of their goals in the last 15 minutes. And I just think the longer we stay in it, the more our chances, rather than trying to sort of hit them early and then like try and play an open style like we did in the first game.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting hearing John talk about how Liverpool play well in transitional games, because I think a lot of us would look back at that first game and think that we did quite well. But as we did before, we checked out the expected goals from values from that game, and Leeds had 0.6 XG in that fixture, which translated into three goals, which is quite an unlikely thing to happen. And obviously with all the caveats of single game XG totals being, you know, important, it being important to take those with a pinch of salt, because obviously it's a tiny sample size and there will be that kind of variance over that sort of time period. But at the same time, I think we come out of that game looking like we did better than we perhaps did based on the scoreline. And that was a game which was, you know, highly transitional. And John mentioned the Atalanta game that Liverpool won in the Champions League, which he described as being probably the best game that they've played this season. And so I think if we do get drawn into that kind of transitional game, the only way you have a hope of sort of coming out with something there is if you wildly overperform your XG numbers there. I think you were saying, Tom, that the post-shot XG in that game was 2.1 for Leeds. So they basically doubled the chances that they had, the quality of the chances they had by shooting, which is pretty rare for us. And we know that in seasons past, we've really struggled. We've usually reduced the quality of our chances by shooting. So that was just, I think, a bit of an outlier where our finishing was just bang on for the day. And that's, if we did get drawn into a kind of transitional game like that with Liverpool, I think you'd have to rely on the same sort of luck that we did rely against Manchester City as well.
You'd need luck at both ends as well, wouldn't you? Because you'd require Liverpool to underperform their XG. And although they have broadly done that across the season, Salah and Jota are currently both outperforming their expected goals performance. So, you'd be really taking a chance then.
Yeah, it'd be very much vibes and inshallah type of performance that we had last week, and I don't think I can go through that again. So, but let's talk a little bit about how we feel about where Liverpool are right now, and just how we feel about going into this game. Because I mentioned last week, and it's funny, isn't it? Because I've described this, much to the chagrin of many of our listeners, as a bit of a smash and grab last week. And I think the problem is that when you go through a game like that and you think, oh, you know, we sort of gone toe-to-toe for Man City, gone to toe-to-toe with Man City, and then we've come out with the result here, even though we're down to 10 men, surely that means we're going to have a chance against a Liverpool side who are a little bit shaky. But I don't think it maybe is quite as simple as that. So how are we feeling, Darren, about where Liverpool are at right now in terms of assessing our chances of getting anything out of this game?
Yeah, I think Liverpool are in a really interesting place because obviously they've gone through the majority of the season without who is, you know, the person who's probably the best centre back in the world at the moment. And any team that loses a player of that quality is going to struggle. So I think, you know, as John said in the interview, I think that definitely has an impact. But I also just get the sense that Liverpool are kind of in a transition, really, that they've kind of ridden on the coattails of that amazing front three for a few years now, and I think that we're starting to see the dip in their performance. They've all overperformed for a couple of years, and I think that in terms of, you know, their XG performance and stuff. But I think you're definitely seeing, you know, Firmino and Mane start to drop off this season, or at least have seasons which are significantly worse than the ones that they've had before. And I think that John alluded to a sense that he feels like Klopp is trying to kind of slightly tweak the style and trying to make them a bit more controlled and a bit more positional and a bit more possession based. So I just do feel at this moment in time that they are in a bit of a transition, and although their results have picked up a little bit, it does feel like a good time to play them. And you know, I think that in terms of what we can take from the City game, I completely agree with you. I mean, it's not only a smash and grab, we absolutely robbed the bank, and I enjoyed watching us do that. But I think the chances of us repeating that trick are quite slim, so we're going to have to come up with something different against Liverpool in order to try and get any sort of result out of it.
I would have probably preferred to play Liverpool a couple of weeks ago when they were right in the middle of that bad run of form, because they've started to turn a corner now. But I completely agree with everything that Darren's saying. Like, there isn't the fear that was there for the first game, and would have been if you'd had if you were played them in like any time in the two previous seasons as well. I think the only thing I think for me that we could take from the Man City match, which we can sort of use for this match, is that we've beaten one of those top six sides now. We haven't got hammered by one of them, and it means that it's almost like the pressure is almost a little bit off, because we're not going to then lose like the next three games in a row, and we're not going to concede loads of goals. So you'd feel like I kind of feel like more optimistic. I personally feel more optimistic about this game because I'm not like worrying about getting the batteries back to back, and like you might feel that the players have some sort of similar feelings as well, and that and I know it's like we've said it's not repeatable really from last weekend, but it's the sort of like sportsmanship psychology that if you can do it once, why can't you do it again?
Yeah, I'm less sanguine on our chances, to be honest. And part of this is because actually, if you look at the style of football that we played last week when we beat Man City, it was very much relegation battling team style tactics. And if you look at a lot of those teams, like thinking like teams like West Brom and I think Sheffield United have got results against, was it Manchester United this season? I feel as though that our result is like in that kind of vein. And the problem is not that we aren't going to get results like that against the big sides. It's that we're not going to play in that style and get those kind of results against big sides, because we're always going to try and go toe-to-toe with them to a certain extent. And that's why, for me, that the red card was so important, because it meant it sort of forced us to have to play that way. And, you know, we've talked about this at length before. Like Bielsa could... we could play that football if we wanted to, but I don't think he wants to, because I think he thinks it's, in the long run, it's better for us to take those hits and to try and go toe-to-toe with those teams, so that when it comes around to the summer and we bring in new players and we bring in better players, you slot them into the system, and suddenly you're like, oh, now we're looking much more able to make play these sorts of games. And so I think we'll probably, I don't think we'll be anywhere near as cagey, like you say, as we were against Man City. And I think that's understandable because, you know, we won't be going down to 10 men. We won't just ditch, you know, everything that we do. I mean, in the second half against Man City, we were basically playing a zonal system pretty much entirely with tweaks here and there, but that was it. You know, we were playing a form of football that we will never play again this season unless we go down to 10 men, I suspect.
We should go down to 10 men is what you're saying.
Yeah, well, I did tweet today about Dortmund that maybe they should have gone down to 10 men against City because that might have helped them out. But let's move on and talk a little bit about structure. We've talked about how Liverpool usually play a 4-3-3. City do also usually play a 4-3-3. So, John did mention that they've been shifting to a 4-2-3-1 later on in games to close things down at the end of fixtures. I think both of these formations pretty much suit us, as we know. In the 4-3-3, obviously it means that Calvin Phillips may be sort of pushed out of position a little bit, just pushing up on their eights. It depends how deep their eights play. Against a 4-2-3-1, it will look nice because, Phillips can just sit on the 10 and then the other two eights have got the double pivot at the opposite end. So, I don't think there's really much to say about the structure per se, but I do think there are some interesting questions that we have about the way that we fill out our 4-1-4-1 or 4-3-3, however you're going to look at it. So I think the big question, I suppose, is Liam Cooper's out, so it's just a case of Pascal Strouk in, right, Tom Alderson?
Yeah, definitely. I think this question was kind of answered itself in the City game because when Cooper went off, it was Strouk that came on immediately, not Cock. So anyone that was thinking, oh, this is Coco Llorente time, it's definitely not. It's the left-footed, right-footed thing is, we always knew that was the case, but that the substitution on Saturday confirmed that.
I think it's absolute testament as well to Pascal Strouk. If I remember just before when the team sheet was announced for the first Liverpool game, and although I'd already been a bit of a fan of Pascal by that point, that been a bit worried about him coming up against that front three, and you know, it's absolute kind of the development of his play throughout the season and the increase in confidence that we've all got in him, that I don't think any of us are at all worried about him coming up against Liverpool's front three, whatever version of it happens to play on Monday. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing him play again because I really enjoy watching him defend.
We've been advocates of Liam Cooper, I think, for especially the last few months when I think he's been getting panned a little bit by some of the fan base. But there's almost a sense in which I'm quite pleased that Pascal has these three games to come in and do more development, especially against big sides. One of the things that I suppose we worried about when we had all of the centre-backs back was that, you know, this was going to sort of derail Strouk's development a little bit. But, you know, it's just carrying on as it's gone all season, right, where he gets a few games in here, there and everywhere. So he's played right centre-back, left centre-back. He's played in the defensive midfield position as well. He's played in a back three and a back two. So I'm just treating that, especially at this point in the season where, let's be honest, who cares if we get panned by Liverpool. I want to see players like Pascal Strouk getting those minutes in. We talk about why we're not playing players like Joffe and why we're not bringing players who could get some development in. So I think when it actually does happen, we sort of just have to take it like that and say, you know, this is more minutes in the legs, this is more experience in big games against big teams. If Pascal Strouk is going to carry on making the sort of steps that he's making, I'm glad that he's playing in games like this.
And I absolutely trust him to pick up the man marking or share the man marking with Llorente for whoever ends up playing the more central of the attacking role for Liverpool. I've got no concerns.
So then I guess elsewhere, the big question is, as it is every week, is it going to be Dallas in the middle or at left back? And it feels at this point that we're just in a scenario where it's just always going to be Dallas in the middle now and Alioski at left back. Are you happy with that, Darren?
Well, I think that actually taking Dallas out at this stage would be a complete folly, given that we've managed to find a blend in midfield which seems to work in the majority of games and seems to give us an extra degree of solidity. Yeah, I'm absolutely happy with that. I think it would be, I'd be a bit worried if we did decide to move Dallas to left back, I would be really concerned about what that would do to the midfield and how easy it's been for teams to run through it in times when he wasn't playing there. So yeah, definitely.
It's funny, isn't it? Because like last season, I think fullback was definitely Dallas's better position. We played him in central midfield a few times, and because we were so dominant, we just had a completely different skill set that we were expecting of him. And now that nexus has just completely reversed, and it's now got to the point where I'm kind of like, I don't really want to see Dallas as a fullback in the Premier League because I don't think he's good enough to be a fullback in the Premier League, but absolutely want him in the midfield because he does give us that solidity that we just haven't had for long stretches of the season, particularly in the middle of this season. Beyond that, I think we've pretty much covered the team selection. I suppose the other thing is that we'll have Tyler Roberts coming in the middle by dint of the fact that he's the only person really available. I suppose we might see someone like Joe Gelhardt, but we haven't seen him yet. I don't suggest that Bielsa's just suddenly going to start trying to develop youngsters at this point. So is there anything that anyone else wanted to say about the potential changes in the structure?
I'd quite like to talk about Phillips. Mm-hmm. John mentioned a lot about Phillips and his passing in the first game. And that's not something that you kind of think of Phillips. Like, we've seen him do those sort of passes. The Everton game is the one that definitely comes to mind. But in terms of our actual build up, like Phillips doing those long passes isn't really a key feature. But it was something that John was particularly concerned about. Now, I don't know. I think he just had PTSD from Tony Cruz doing the same passes in the Real Madrid game in the first leg. But if we are going to try and hit those channels behind Alexander-Arnold, is it going to be Phillips that you think is going to do them? Or do you think it'll be I think Llorente is probably the one that comes to mind, but I don't know if he's actually got that ability. I don't think we've seen it, really.
Yeah, this is an interesting one, and it's got me thinking about the scenarios in which we see Phillips doing those passes, because he does have a crossfield pass in him, obviously, and but we don't see it very often. We see it in those games like Everton, where we're playing against a mid block where there's no pressure really on the back line, and Phillips can get the ball with space in front of him and take his time to pick those passes. I don't think Liverpool will be playing in that way at all, and I also kind of think if we do play in a similar way to the way that we played against Manchester City, those balls were being used as an out ball, as a way of just sort of releasing pressure from the back. So again, I talked about how in the Patreon video, I looked at the chances that Leeds created in the first half against City. And I think we created something like six chances, one of which was the goal, which came from the, obviously from the left-hand side with through Helder Costa and Bamford. The other five chances all came down the right-hand side, and they all came from long balls into that channel looking for Rafinha. They all came from Meslier, or they came from Liam Cooper. And the ones that came from Meslier came from very specific situations where Cooper played the ball back to him and he just hit the ball down that channel. And then also the other example came from when Llorente played the ball back to Cooper, and he hit him in that channel. I think it was in the end it was offside, but he definitely got separation between himself and his centre back, or his wing back at full back, sorry, at the time. So I guess my question is, like, how do we expect the ball to be moved into those areas? Will it be a case of us trying to transition the ball through into the sort of midfield areas, play it back to Phillips, and then see him hitting those channels? Which I don't think we will, because I don't think we transition very well anymore, because I think we realise that we don't possess the ball very well. And so I think it may well be the case that we try and transition the ball, but then end up just playing back to the keeper or the defender and then hitting those channels, in which case you're not really using Phillips. Now, what I would say is that I'll caveat that with what I said before, which was, now that if we are trying to hit that left-hand side channel rather than the right-hand side channel, we may try and get Phillips on the ball to hit those channels like he did in the game at the beginning of the season. But I think in those scenarios, what we'll probably see is him dropping in between the centre-backs maybe to pick up the ball, or just sort of dropping a bit deeper to try and get that sort of leverage on the ball that he needs. So yeah, I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah, I think John's memory of that game is quite different from mine, because I seem to remember that although there was that one fantastic pass which led to the Jack Harrison goal in the end, I actually felt that Phillips struggled in possession a lot of the time in that game, is my memory. So I think it will be really interesting to see whether that's any different and how we can get him on the ball, because I'm sure that you know, Liverpool will be fully aware of his ability to hit those long passes when he's given time and space, and will be trying everything they can to deny him, you know, the time and space to do that. So I think it's a really fascinating thing to watch out for.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the players who need to play well on Monday night. I'll start with you, Darren. Who have you got down to play well?
It's become the sort of stock answer recently, because we are so reliant on him now, and particularly in the teams against the games against these bigger teams. But I think it's really important that Rafinha has a good game, because I think it's very unlikely that we're gonna dominate the ball to the degree that Bielsa would ordinarily want us to do and would do in his idealised version of football. So we're going to be looking to get Rafinha in and away behind the fullbacks on either side, and I think he's going to need to, you know, make good use of those opportunities to transition and to kind of have a real impact on the game. So I think if he doesn't play well and if he doesn't influence the game, I think it dramatically reduces our chances of taking anything from it.
Tom, how about you? Have you got anyone that you would add to that?
I think I'm going to add Alioski to that, if we look at the more defensive side, because, well, Salah is their best player and Alioski is our worst player. So if you're doing like tactics 101, is don't put your best player, their best player, against your worst player. But unfortunately, because Dallas has to play in midfield, then Alioski has to play a left back. So I think we're just going to hope Alioski doesn't have an absolute clanger, and I'll probably have to throw Strouk in as someone who's going to play well, because he's going to be cleaning up Alioski's mess.
And in terms of how you expect the game to go, Tom, how do you see it unfolding?
So I do think it'll be an end-to-end game, but I don't think it'll be the all sort of the really open game that we saw in the first match, because since then both teams have like gone through the season and realised that they can't really do that because they get caught out. Because like we've seen it last couple of weeks that we've kind of drop back our press, and we're a bit more defensively minded now. And then Liverpool, like we've also said, they're without Van Dijk, they've got to just be a bit more sort of cagey with their approach. So I do think that both teams will go out and try and attack and score goals, but I just don't think it'll be as open as the first game.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how we cope with Liverpool's set pieces without Van Dijk, because I seem to recall them causing us absolute chaos and me absolutely shitting my pants every time they got a corner or a free kick in around the box. So I think that's one factor that I think I'll be looking out for. But I expect us to try and be on the front foot in the press a little bit more than we were against City. I expect us to try and perhaps put pressure on Thiago if he plays, because I think that you know, whilst he's a fantastic player, I don't necessarily think that playing at the sort of tempo that we would ordinarily want to play necessarily would suit him. So I think we will try and have a go at them. It's just whether we can do that effectively and cause them enough problems to try and take anything from it. And to be honest, I'm not sure. I think, you know, although Liverpool are in, you know, relatively poorer moment or having a poorer season, they still go into this game heavy favourites. And if basically my view on it is that if we're not able to keep Jota and Salah quiet, then we've really got little chance of taking anything from it.
Well, Darren nearly fell asleep at the end there, so it's better to end here. It's a late night for us all. Here endeth the lesson. That game is on Monday. In the evening. We will be back, I think, on Tuesday to review it. Hopefully we'll have lots to talk about then. If you do like our stuff and you want to get more of it, then do head over to the Patreon channel, which is www.patreon.com/allstatsaren't we. We do have a piece coming out this week on our Medium from Josh Hobbs, looking at a player that we have been linked with. So get ready for the silly season in the summer. It's beginning here.
Is it Michael Cuisance?
Yeah, it's the Michael Cuisance rehash from last summer. So lots for you to look forward to there. But yeah, other than that, it's time for bed and time for me to say thank you to Darren.
Thank you.
And thank you to Tom.
Thank you very much.
And we'll see you after the Liverpool game.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.